Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. On today's show, we have Dana Lane, our aquarist here at Blank Park Zoo. Takes care of all the fish and the corals and all those fun underwater creatures. And she'll be here to tell us about some of the things going on in that department, as well as some of the conservation items that she's interested in as well. So Jesse Lowry, our director of conservation and research, is also here, and she will get today's show started.
Thank you so much, Ryan. It's great to be back, and we're excited, Dana, to have you here today. I always like to start off the program with just a couple minutes of setting the stage, laying the foundation of the role of a modern zoo, and why we have this radio show called Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. The mission of Blank Park Zoo is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. But I like to call the zoo a window to the wild, a place where you can invite your family and the community and schools, people of all ages to come in and get a glimpse of the beauty that nature has to offer, to look into the eyes of a tiger, to see the amazing agility of a snow leopard and California sea lions, and feel that sense of awe that we all feel when we see these amazing creatures. But what we like to do here at the zoo is find ways to turn that warm, fuzzy feeling that we all get into a real conservation action, into something that's going to make a difference for wildlife and wild places all around the world. And Blank Park Zoo does that in multiple ways. We try to be as green as possible because sustainability has a direct effect on wildlife. We educate about conservation to all ages, talking about actions you can take for wildlife. But the backbone of what a zoo can do to help save animals in the wild is the support, both in kind and financial, of field organizations. Those organizations and individuals that are out on the front lines in the range countries of the animals, a lot of the animals that we have here at Blank Park Zoo, but some we don't, like chimpanzees. Those people who are out on the front lines working to save them. And so the moral of the story is that a portion of every dollar that we make here at Blank Park Zoo goes to In the Wild Conservation. So it goes to organizations like Giraffe Conservation Foundation, working in Namibia and other African countries to save the giraffe. It goes to International Rhino Foundation, working in all countries in which rhinos exist. Places like Thailand for the Hornbill Research Foundation. We also support Okapi Conservation Project, Chimpanzee Sanctuary and Wildlife Conservation Trust, literally all over the world, even in Madagascar with Conservation Fusion. And that is really making an impact across the world. And one of the things that our field organizations really have to abide by the holistic view of conservation, and that is taking in consideration the health and welfare of individual animals, the health of the environment, the health of animal populations, and the health and well-being and aspirations of the local people. And so that's really the best way to do conservation. So every time you visit Blank Park Zoo, if you become a member of Blank Park Zoo, you are helping to save animals in the wild. And so that's a great place to start, is just by visiting the zoo if you really care about wildlife. But it also means that every single Blank Park Zoo staff member is helping to save animals in the wild. Whether you are a custodial staff member or a zookeeper or an office worker, everybody's doing a really important part to make the zoo successful and is a part of this conservation story. And that's what I love about this podcast, Ryan, is that we're really recording all of the different conservation stories and showing the community all these different ways that we're making a difference. And by joining us, people can make a difference too.
Absolutely.
And so we're excited to have Dana here today. And the reason why we invited Dana, I'm excited to talk about her role in the aquariums and all of our aquatic life here at the zoo. But something very exciting is happening with Dana this coming year in 2019. So I was talking about the support of field organizations as an important thing that modern zoos can do to save animals. Well, Blank Park Zoo has something called the Staff Conservation Fund. Some people say are a small zoo. I like to say that we're intimate, but we've got about 70 full-time staff members, and it was only 40 several years ago. We're really growing. But those staff members are experts in everything from rhino husbandry to graphic design to maintenance. We've got artists on our staff, and the field organizations, which we like to support, oftentimes have a very small team, and they're wearing many hats, literally out in the Namibian desert in a tent with a dying laptop battery, you know, making grant reports and checking field, radio tracking collars all at the same time. And so why couldn't we send our staff into the field to help these really important field organizations? And that's what the Staff Conservation Fund is for. And so Dana applied for the Staff Conservation Fund, and she has been granted the award for 2019. And we want to talk to you today, Dana, about your plan. So welcome again to the show.
Thank you.
Tell us just for a moment what your role is here at the zoo, and then let's talk about your plans for 2019.
Yeah. So as Ryan mentioned, I'm one of the aquarists here at Blank Park Zoo. I'm just recently promoted to the aquarium supervisor. So I do work with quite a range of animals, not your everyday Iowa animals. So we have several different exhibits from saltwater, tropical to cold water to Amazon freshwater exhibits, as well as aquatic reptiles. So we have our dwarf caiman, pond turtles that you would find here in Iowa. And we even take care of amphibians. So it's been a really fun experience working at the zoo. I started out as an intern in college here and came back to work here full time. And it's just been a great experience. And I'm really excited about this opportunity to be able to get my hands wet in the wild and kind of help with some conservation projects that have always interested me. So as you were saying before, I'm going to North Carolina, specifically Pine Knoll Shores, which is an island off the coast, just a few miles. So they actually were affected by recent hurricanes. So I'm interested to also see how that has affected them and their conservation projects. But two of their projects I'm excited to work with. One is their sea turtle rehab and rehabilitation project. So North Carolina is home to 5 of 7 species of sea turtles. So hopefully going during nesting season, I'll get to see a lot of females coming up on the beaches, laying nests, as well as nests hatching, the hatchlings coming out, returning to the ocean. And a big part of that project is making sure that, one, the hatchlings that have hatched are returning properly. One of their big issues, especially with light pollution, beach pollution, is finding their way back. It's very important with the moon to kind of show them where to go. So if you're getting lights from all different hotels, things like that, that can confuse the hatchlings. So, one, making sure they're returning properly and they're not being predated on by people's pets, such as dogs, cats, even seabirds can pick those small sea turtles off the beaches. So making sure they're returning properly. And then on the other side of that is making sure that the adults that are coming up on shore are not stranded for specific reasons like entanglements from nets. Pollution entanglements is a huge thing with sea turtles. So if any of those individuals do come up injured on the beaches, they told me that I would be allowed to be a part of those vet procedures, husbandry management of those animals after they've been seen by their veterinary staff until they are able to be returned to the ocean.
When you say sea turtles,
yeah,
explain maybe for someone who doesn't know what the difference between a turtle you might see in Iowa and a sea turtle.
Yeah. So sea turtles you would find in Iowa are considered semi-aquatic freshwater turtles. So they spend their entire life in either freshwater or surrounding areas, so ponds, things like that. So they would never be found in salt water. So sea turtles are found in all oceans. They spend the majority of their life migrating, searching for food along coral reefs, all the way into deep ocean waters. And then once a year, females will find beaches and they will come up and nest. So sea turtles, as you can guess from the name, are generally found in salt water.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about the size, because when I first found out exactly how large sea turtles were, mm-hmm. I could not believe it. How big compared to maybe our Aldabra tortoise that we have here at the zoo? How big are some of these species? And can you name off a couple of the species that you'll be working with?
Yeah. So along that coast, you would find loggerhead sea turtles are probably the most abundant. But not only loggerheads, there are green sea turtles, ridleys. So those are a couple species that I will hopefully get to be working with. As far as size, you know, I don't have specific numbers, but they are quite large. So compared to Aldabras, they are very close in size. They can be 4 feet carapace length, so that's the top of their shell. I want to say four feet long is pretty typical, and they can weigh hundreds of pounds, and their life expectancy is that of a tortoise as well. So there's not a specific number, but they say anywhere from 100 to 200 years old, possibly. They're not quite sure on ages.
They live so long, we can't study how long they live because
exactly.
They outlive us.
Yes, exactly. So it's really important that we're protecting these females and their hatchlings, because the really important time period for them to break out and to grow old enough is really that first couple years of their life. So, you know, the first 10 years, we want to make sure that those hatchlings are surviving past that point into sexual maturity so they can continue their populations.
Tell us more about just the natural life cycle of a sea turtle and what are some of the predators. I've heard that they come back to the same beach every year. Is that true?
Yes. A lot of times females will return to the same area, not just the same beach, but the same area. So that's why it is really important that, you know, they're protecting and patrolling these beaches, making sure that it is safe for the females to come back. You know, I'm not sure exactly on their sexual what age it is once they reach sexual maturity. I want to say it's 20s or older. And after that happens, then those females will return every single year to lay eggs. And they say they can lay anywhere from 100 to 500 eggs in one nest.
And so the actual tasks that you'll be doing out there, what I'm imagining in my mind's eye, is that you'll actually be patrolling the beach. Mm-hmm. And does most of this action happen at nighttime? And so basically, if you see some hatchlings, which I imagine they're tiny, tiny, mm-hmm. going towards the lights, going towards the hotels, you'll literally just turn them around. And so they get to go to the water, and also just patrolling for the adults as well?
Yes. Yeah, so I actually recently was able to go to Cancun and see another rehab project similar to what North Carolina is doing. And that's exactly what they did. They had beach patrols go out. Generally, it's about 8-9 o'clock at night. Females will start to come up around 10 or so. And you'll see it's quite a lot of effort. And they will go pretty far in, several yards. So all these females, I don't know how they do it. They're so heavy, but they pull themselves through the sand. And what we would do is just make sure that, you know, tourists or people on the beach are giving them their space, leaving them alone, and then making sure that those nests that they build are marked off before the morning. And I'm not quite sure if they do that in Pinal Shores, but I know some rehab facilities, they will actually excavate those eggs and move them to a safer location so it's not right in the middle of foot traffic where people are walking along the beach. And then, yes, when the hatchlings return to the ocean, making sure they are going the right direction and not getting lost or being picked up by seabirds or things like that.
This is so exciting. When I was a senior in college, I went to Costa Rica for a month to study black howler monkeys in the rainforest. And we got to take a little side trip to Tortuguero Beach, which is a place that sea turtles come, and got to learn all about this. So we're so excited. And I hope that, Ryan, maybe you have some camera equipment that we can send with Dana. Without some really bright lights, we'll figure something out, because yeah. we want to record your amazing experiences.
Yeah.
So you'll get to work with turtles, but is there another animal that
yes.
you might get to work with?
I'm really excited. So we also may get the opportunity to work with sand tiger sharks. Right now, AZA's SAFE initiative, one of the big species they're looking at is sand tiger sharks. One, because they are in a lot of different aquariums around the country, have them under human care, but they also are extremely vulnerable in the wild. Sand tiger sharks can be found pretty much all over the world, Southeast Asia, Australia especially, all around the coast of Africa and the east coast of both North and South America. So they are quite a widespread species. And what they're looking to do is a lot of research on just general natural history of these animals, as well as how they can keep them more healthy in captivity, and then hopefully in return reproduction. So one of the big things is they're looking at, you know, how does seawater, water quality, how does lighting, things like that affect their general reproduction, and how they can mimic that in aquariums. So hopefully I'll be getting to go out on some boats and doing some observations, maybe some collection as far as sperm collection. I know they do have quite a big project with SeaSARC. They do a lot of reproductive research. So hopefully we'll be doing some of that. And then at the same time, we'll also be doing some observations of their sand tiger sharks at the aquarium itself.
So. When you say sand tiger shark, could you explain maybe what a sand tiger shark looks like mm-hmm. so that we can distinguish that
yeah.
in our mind's eye?
So sand tiger sharks can be anywhere from 6 to 10 feet in length. They can weigh up to about 200, 250 pounds. They are actually distant cousins of a great white shark, but they're much more docile. A lot of people are working to change the image of sharks. So sand tiger sharks can be seen at a lot of aquariums around the country. And again, like I said, they're one of the more docile species. So even though they have that great white shark look to them, they can be actually very friendly. So that's kind of what, if you imagine what they would look like, they're very long, gray, but very beautiful sharks.
Even though most of us love the movies Jaws, I know that that did a lot of damage to just mm-hmm. the public perception of sharks. Mm-hmm. And yes, we need to get back to realizing their ecological importance and knowing that not every shark is a great white. And when we enter the ocean, we're entering into their habitat
yes.
as well. Mm-hmm. That is really, really exciting. So when you say that you're going to go out and observe the sharks, how do you observe sharks in the wild? Will you be scuba diving? Will you be getting in the water?
Hopefully. So, you know, I'm not quite sure yet exactly what capacity I'll be observing them. But that is hopefully one of my goals, is to be diving in, getting good footage, hopefully. Or I know sometimes they will attach cameras to boats and things like that. So you can observe them without being present around them, so we can give them their space. But you know, that is something I'm excited to find out exactly what's going to be happening. So
we're really mm-hmm. excited to hear more about your trip. And for mm-hmm. those who are listening right now, will there be opportunities while you're sharing your successes next year after your experience where folks can learn more about your experience?
Yeah, so I'm hoping to get a lot of video, a lot of footage, bring back great pictures, so I can really share my experience so people can really feel like they were a part of my experience. I'm hoping to be able to share that live while I'm down there or over there in North Carolina. But when I come back, I'd also really like to have the opportunity to share my story with everybody. So in whatever capacity I can, I'd really like to share that story as many times. Not being near an ocean, but yet still affecting the ocean, I think it's going to be a really good story to share with Iowans and people around the city of Des Moines.
That sounds good. Well, we'll definitely do another podcast when you're done as well.
Yeah.
So you are going out into the wild. You're going to the East Coast to study and help conserve these amazing animals. Tell us about another project that we hopefully are going to do here at Blank Park Zoo to conserve a native species of fish.
Yeah, so I had the idea maybe about a year or so ago. You know, there's so many great conservation projects that deal with the coast and all these animals that we affect in the ocean. And it's, you know, being in Iowa, sometimes you feel like that's just so far away. How can I really help? And loving fish in general, I wanted to do something that was a little bit more local, because there are a lot of species locally that need our help, especially in an aquatic setting. So I did a little research and found out actually there is several different species, but specifically the Topeka shiner is one that several groups have gotten together to try to bring back. I believe it's, I can list the states, but I want to say Iowa, Nebraska, Missouri, Kansas are four of the ones that I know. There may be one or two more states that they were naturally found in and are now considered endangered in all of those states. Missouri has successfully spawned and bred Topeka shiners. But what I'm looking to do here is work with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife and do something here at the zoo where we can collect wild Topeka shiners, breed them here at our facility, and then re-release them into oxbows that have been renovated or rehabbed. So volunteers have gone out and they've tried to bring back these oxbows, which are very important to how Topeka shiners breed. And those are affected from runoff. Things like that is what's really damaging their environment. So now that they have been renovated, we're going to hopefully re-release them and bring them back in some streams in Iowa.
So when you say an oxbow, is that like a river that has changed path and then has cut off the old section of the river?
Yep. So an oxbow specifically is kind of an S shape in the river or stream. So that back and forth motion gives several different pockets of life. So it can be quick moving water to shallow, slow moving water. And that's really how the Topeka shiners that's how they breed. So that they'll go from the quick streams, lay eggs in the more shallow water, and then continue down those oxbows. So what happens is, like you said, Brian, with runoff that kind of washes out that back and forth of the river. So people have gone in, excavated those areas, made tree lines along them that keep it in place. Things like that kind of help bring back those habitats that are very important to Topeka shiners and other streamlined fish.
That's really exciting. So what would be involved in breeding a native fish like that here at Blank Park Zoo?
So there's been several papers and there's a couple hatcheries that have successfully bred Topeka shiners in their under human care. There's actually a lot involved. They're very temperature dependent from season to season. So it has to drop down into the 50s or 60s. And then that kind of sparks the females and the males to come together and they'll spawn at that time. And then they actually, as you can imagine in Iowa, the streams reach temperatures up to 80 in the summer. So, you know, it's quite a hefty swing of temperature. And another thing is really important for their breeding is they use sunfish or bluegill nests. So having the different types of nests that are already in place, they will reuse those nests for their breeding. So so hopefully if we make a tank that looks similar to what they would find naturally in their environment, keep close track of water quality that so it matches what they would naturally find in those oxbows. And then just making sure that, having the proper genetics. So I know Iowa State is doing a study right now to see what exactly or which oxbows we should be taking shiners from and reproducing those. So
that sounds great. And another example of Blank Park Zoo breeding a species and releasing it to the wild here in Iowa, of course, is our trumpeter swans. We've hatched 36 trumpeter swans from Blank Park Zoo and released them into the wild and have contributed to this Midwest success story of the restoration of trumpeter swans. We used to put big clunky collars on the swans at the beginning of the restoration project in collaboration with the DNR and tons of other agencies. And one of our swans was actually seen in Oklahoma, but they have become so prevalent and successful that they don't need to be tracked anymore. And so it's been a really exciting project to be involved with over the years. And I hope that we can add Topeka Shiner to our list. Yeah.
The trumpeter swan's a big bird.
Yes, it is.
Big bird, yeah.
When I first started working here 14 years ago, I was a zookeeper, and I started out down in Kids Kingdom with the domestic animals. And I was walking down the hill one day, and I was thinking, I wonder why they call them trumpeter swans. And then I heard them trumpet.
Yeah.
And it's a really neat vocalization.
It's a lot of fun to watch the trumpeter swans. I think it's the funnest part of the trumpeter swans is when they chase off geese,
mm-hmm.
and then they do that little dance and that honk, like, we chased off the geese.
The listeners cannot see, but Ryan just kind of acted out the swan's motion.
The swan dance.
Really missed a lot. So, Dana, we just got a few minutes left. Can you just kind of talk to us about how you see the zoo's impact in saving animals? And every day as a zookeeper here, you know, where do you see our strengths and the strength of AZA accredited zoos in helping wildlife?
Being an aquarist at a zoo, especially in Iowa, you know, you don't always think about our impact in the wild. And I think at one point I was looking through the application and you called it employees in the wild. And I really love that because, you know, every day we come in and it is a job. You know, you come in, you clean, you take care of the animals and it, you know, just like any other job. But the best part is what we get out of it. And not only taking care of the animals that we have here at the zoo, but how can we transfer that to the animals in the wild? And getting the opportunity to go out and, not like I said before, get my hands wet and not only help, but also learn from other organizations. I think that's a really strong, strong thing that the zoo here does, is sending people out to not only help those in the wild, but also to educate ourselves and be better zookeepers every single day. I keep smiling every time I think about going to North Carolina. I'm so excited to see what I get to do, what I get to learn, and what I can use from what I've learned in the past and help these organizations. So, I love that our zoo cares not just about what we have here at the zoo, but what we can do out in the wild and who all we can help.
What inspired you to be a conservationist?
Oh, I don't know. When I was growing up, I always wanted to work with marine animals and I didn't quite know how or in what capacity. When I was really young, we took a trip to Jamaica and it was my first time snorkeling. So we were off on the beach, just snorkeling around, looking at all the really colorful fish. And, I saw how much, not only was it an awesome experience to see those animals out in the wild, but just how much it brought to Jamaica. That country is such a wonderful place to go and so much fauna to look at. And it's really interesting to see all of those animals in the wild. So it really brought something home to me. I can help those animals. And so I just kept pushing away, figuring out how I can do more. And so now here I am working with fish in Iowa. So it's been a great experience.
We're so excited for you, and your passion and enthusiasm really shows. So thank you so much for all the work that you do here at Blank Park Zoo and the work that you do to conserve animals around the world. We cannot wait for you to take your trip. So excited to hear more about it. And just thanks for being with us today, Dana.
Yeah, of course.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today. And if you want to learn more about Blank Park Zoo, head over to our website, blankparkzoo.com, and you can learn about our hours. And then hop on our social media pages and our YouTube page, especially because we have nearly 500 videos. And debuting soon will be an aquarium webcam.
Yep.
Well, we're out of time for today, so join us next time for Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.